Afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. I'm here with my thrifting queen, my pop culture princess. Do you like that? Do you like that?
I am so into these names that you're giving me. I'm going to start titling myself with them.
Okay, I'm going to try and come up with good ones every week. Faith Richardson is with me. How are you doing? Are you thriving? Are you surviving? What's the mood of the moment in your household?
I feel like this week has been a very sort of like scattered affair of kind of like clinging on by our fingertips, where we're just forcing fun at this point. Like, I'm so determined to not be miserable that I'm just insisting that we have fun at every given moment, to the point that it sort of tips over being fun and just becomes like really regimented time being spent together.
It sounds like, you know, sometimes you're having so much fun that you like exhaust yourself. And then you get kind of like tired.
That's literally it. Like, I feel like Greg would just be quite happy like wallowing a little bit and just watching some TV or whatever, and I'm like, no, we're gonna do a theme tonight and we're gonna play a board game and you're gonna make me cocktails.
I think it's good. I think you need to have a bit of like activities. This is why I've been having this checklist of like, this is what I'm going to do every day, and then like I'll fit things in around it, but I feel like I just have to have some things that I can say, yeah, I have done that.
I know, I'm the same. I've got like a little Trello like to-do list for the week where I can just move things around if I need to, but I'm just like, right, today if I just accomplish like A and B, then the rest of the day I can just do whatever I want, which I think makes me much happier.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, this whole idea of being super productive during lockdown, like, I love the concept of it, but I've wanted to start a podcast for so long. And the fact that we've done this and we've put the effort in and we've actually got like content out there, I'm kind of like, I've achieved more than, you know, I have done towards this goal in the past 6 months. So whatever happens, I should be happy, because that is something that I really, really have wanted to do. And like, I've learned how to edit and publish, and, you know, I'm kind of trying to give myself an easier time of like the work I'm getting done.
I'm exactly the same, where it's like, I'm one of these people where I think we've said this before, where I need to function at like a really high level of like stress and intensity to feel like I'm being productive. So it's kind of been hard having to take a step back, but it's also made me kind of realize that it's like, I am accomplishing things every day, and it's fine that it's not 4,000 things. Like, if I do even just one thing that's productive, whether it's work or putting some of my shit on eBay or walking to the shop, like, I've still accomplished something, and that's fine and that's enough.
Yeah, and I mean, I see loads of stuff, you know, people on Twitter saying like, oh, you know, I just woke up, it's 4 p.m. or I've been staying up till 5 in the morning watching Netflix. And I'm like, I haven't actually deviated that much from my normal schedule. Like, I might be going to sleep a bit later, you know, I'm kind of wandering into work around 9:30 instead of 8:30. Like, okay, wow, you know, what a difference. But actually, I've maintained a pretty normal level of like basic humanness.
No, we're the same as well. Like, usually our morning routine would be like, we'd both get up at like 8 o'clock-ish, and like we'd walk to the gym, and we'd go to the gym, and then Greg would go off to work, and I'd walk back by myself, and then make something to eat and get on with work. Whereas like now it's like we both wake up and walk the dogs and then do a workout at home, and then I just wander off upstairs to work instead. So it's kind of not really much of what's going on with me is deviated, apart from I get to sleep in a little bit more when I need to, which has been delightful.
I know, that is kind of a nice thing that's come out of it. I have to admit, I woke up at like 5:50 this morning with the light, and then I kind of went on my phone for a bit, and then I whacked on a podcast about like the prison system and COVID, which should have stressed me out enough to get me out of bed. I just like went back into such a deep, cozy, warm sleep for another 2 hours.
A nice bit of like morning entertainment.
You know me. But today I've decided is a good day, because I got some mail that I basically haven't received mail for the past 2 months. And finally, the mail service has like caught up with the fact that I'm here and they can deliver to me. So I opened up a package this morning that has my favorite little black dress in it that I thought was forever lost to an ill-fated night at the Gateshead Hilton. So I am just so grateful.
Also, I love that they got this back to you.
Yeah, because this guy didn't put a return address on it. So when it didn't arrive, this was sent 25th of March.
Oh my God.
And I was just like, I'm never seeing this dress again. And also it has one of my favorite t-shirts in there that I didn't even realize was missing, but is just like a pajama t-shirt. And then he also included like a hoodie with like cats on it, which isn't mine and is brand new. So I don't know if that's like a gift or... I mean, I'll take it.
I was going to say, I mean, it's either a gift or he's just got his very in conquest confused.
Oh, shit. I didn't even think about that. Damn it. Other Finn is also a cat person.
Yeah, I would be thrilled with a cat hoodie, to be fair.
Yeah, and it says like, un, deux, trois, quatre.
Oh, my God.
So that makes me think that maybe it is intended for me because it's French, but like...
Yeah. I don't know. That sounds a lot more intentional than just kind of like, oh, there was also this random hoodie. Probably yours. Just going to go with it.
I mean, no letter or explanation, but.
Oh, my God. He just sent you the parcel of things with nothing, like no note.
No. That's all right. Whatever. I'll take the hoodie. It's cool. And I'm super glad I got my dress back as well, because like exactly. I say, it's such a classic piece. I mean, it's just trashy brand. It's nothing like designer. But you know when something's like really flattering on you and like you don't want to give that up.
Yeah. And there's like nothing ever really truly comes close to it. Like you can have other black dresses, but they never really fit you the same or look the same.
No, exactly. So then on, well, I watched this last night. Oh, we both watched it last night, didn't we? The season finale. Have you got sort of a one word, not a one word, one sentence summary of how it left you feeling?
It felt like the end. That is my summary. It felt like they were gearing up to either fraction it off into some different franchises or to just like close the door on Vanderpump Rules, which kind of makes me quite sad. I know we've been quite sort of scathing about this series, but it does make me sad to think it might be over.
Same. I mean, I never want a show to die. I like things to continue. I like things that have brought me a lot of comfort and safety in my life to stay unchanging.
I'm the same. I'm, you know how like a lot of people are kind of like, oh, I'd rather something just like finished on a high, like, you know, they went out when it was like at the peak of it. I'm just like, no, fuck that. If it's at the peak, I want it to keep going. Like, flog that shit until it's unwatchable.
Yeah.
Like, I want to make the choice to stop watching it. Like, I did this with The Walking Dead. Everybody's like cut, like ducked out about four seasons ago, and it's only been the last two seasons where I've just kind of gone, meh, I'm not that bothered about watching anymore. And so I've kind of got them all recorded on my Sky Plus but have yet to watch them, but I'm like, I like to know I've got the choice whether it's shit or not. I want the choice.
I think, you know what, it's classic INTJ. It's like, no, I don't want this decision taken out of my hands. Like, I want to be the empowered one that can say, this is now beneath me, this content, and I can choose to like turn away from it, whereas if someone takes it away from me, then I get like baby that's just someone's taken its toy away, and then I just get angry and I just want to throw food.
Oh no, that's definitely me as well. Like, I don't want them to make this decision, so I'm hoping it's very much not the end, but it felt like an unusually sad, somber ending.
It was so solemn,
wasn't it? It was bizarre, and I don't think they've ever finished a series like that. Like, usually it goes out on like either a really big high or like a really big kind of like explosive kind of thing. This was just a kind of sad fracturing of all the friendship groups, and everybody just kind of been like, maybe we don't really like each other anymore.
I wouldn't be too mad if this was a point where they kind of started to parcel it out into a couple of different show concepts. Like, that I could cope with, I think, on a psychological level, you know.
Yeah,
I still feel like there was that thematic thread running through of like, okay, it's like the tree with the branches, you know, and PR is like the trunk, and then it's going to go off in these different directions, but at its core there's still something, you know, the base element of it is still the same.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking this, it was when they were doing the photo shoot, like at the towards the end of the episode, and I was looking at, obviously she'd brought in all these different like branches of like restaurants and stuff that she's got. So there was like the one in Vegas, there was Tom Tom, there was Pump, there was that other one whose name I can never remember. Villa Blanca.
Yeah.
So she had like all these different things. And I was like, she could really just make this into a full franchise thing where it was like the newbies that are working at Sir, and then they could kind of do like a Tom Tom slash old OG crew spin-off, and then they could do like the trashy ones that are in Vegas for that kind of demographic. And there's so much she could do.
Yeah, you're right. There's so much they could do. I would love to see like a show cast with like mainly gay characters and like a West Hollywood, and that could be Pump.
Yes, definitely. That would be like, so good.
We are so overdue for that. I don't know why this hasn't happened.
I don't either. And like, there's plenty of ways that you can do it without it seeming kind of like novelty or exploitative. Like, it's definitely a thing that I think a lot of people would like to see.
I think there's probably a lot of LGBTQ plus people in the actual TV community that could go into developing it as well.
Definitely. I think it would be a really, really good thing. I mean, look at the success of things like Queer Eye. Like, I feel like they could really make a good little like franchise like branch out from this.
I'm not being funny when I say that I can't look at Anthony from Queer Eye because he's so attractive.
Oh.
And he does so much, like, I feel queasy if I look at him. I feel physically sick to my stomach because he's so gorgeous that I can't take it on any level.
That is truly, like, truly how I feel. Like, he is so beautiful, it's untrue. And even my dad, so me and my mum got my dad into watching Queer Eye, and he got super into it. My dad took it upon himself to message Anthony on Instagram and just be like, from a 62-year-old heterosexual man, I think you're wonderful. I've never been so proud.
That's so good. I thought he was going to like try and sell you off to him because apparently he's bisexual.
Oh really? Oh, there's hope for us yet, Lou.
I know.
You can be my second husband.
Oh god, yeah. There's always room for Anthony.
Yeah.
I'm sure Greg just on like you say, on an objective level, you just have to admire his face.
Yeah, nobody can look at him and not see what a phenomenal specimen of a human being he is.
I think it's my low blood pressure. It just makes me faint. I can't. It's a real problem. So we start with a little recap. And basically the recap to me just shows that essentially there are three main things that have happened this season, right? There's Brittany and Jax's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
There's Stassi's engagement. And then there's some 40-somethings arguing about a pool party.
I think that's pretty much the entire series summarized, and I don't think they needed 17 episodes to do that.
I think the last episode before this one was so good. That's when it really started to feel like kind of Vanderpump Rules vintage, Vanderpump Rules classic again. And then I feel like it was too late on in the season, and then, you know, any kind of possible drama that could have arisen as a result of that had to be so quickly quashed.
I agree. I feel like there was something weird, like, I don't know obviously how much they flip around events and stuff in editing, but there was so much stuff where like it felt like it happened like far too late on or at a weird point. Like we're saying, like, if they put that softball game at the start, it would have made the groups make more sense, and then if we'd had the pool party like war like maybe halfway through, and then we could have seen the fallout from that a bit more. I just think it would have made a lot more sense.
Because then it would have juxtaposed a bit with like the tension between Sandoval and Jax in the run up to the wedding, and then they kind of get over it and make peace at the wedding, and then this would have been like another opportunity for it to explode.
Yeah, exactly. And I just kind of feel like we sort of saw like an explosion, but there was no aftershock of it. It was just like, oh well, it's gone off, but that was it. Nothing else happened. Like a really disappointing firework, you know, it kind of goes up in the sky and you're like, oh, that was it, that's gone.
And it just kind of fizzles.
Yeah,
it's like boom.
Yeah, and you're like, that's worse than if it didn't go off at all.
So we open up at Sir, and Sheena walks in, and she is literally wearing sunglasses that are straight out of the Fly Like a G6 2010 music video.
I feel like Sheena has never truly left that era.
Sheena is so deeply embedded in 2010 culture, aesthetic. Like, still loves a booty short. Can you imagine Sheena in like a prairie dress?
Oh my god, no, it would never happen. Sheena wears exclusively things that are both skin tight and revealing, and probably just one block color at all times. Never a print, never a long flowing midi dress, nothing.
No, never a puff sleeve. It's always like a tight fit scoop neck spaghetti strap with high waisted denim.
Yeah. Exclusively.
No mum jeans. She is still on a skinny jegging. I bet she owns jeggings still.
She 100% wears jeggings. You know she thinks that they're the same.
I've decided that I will never wear a skinny jean again. It will only be straight leg or flare from here on out.
I love a flare jean.
Ugh.
I managed to find some vintage Levi's ones in a charity shop, and they were actually men's, but they fit so impeccably. I know that. Oh, I just love them so much.
That's so good. I really need to go jean shopping, but I hate the thought of doing it online because I have such a long, weird, gangly body that I just get cut in half by most jeans. Like, I need such a massive rise that, I don't know, I might order some online with like a good returns policy, but otherwise, yeah. I think I might be jeanless for quite some time.
I loathe jean shopping. I'm such an awkward shape as well because I have like really, really big hips and like thighs, but then I have quite a small waist and then quite small calves, but like quite a long like torso region. So everything's kind of like cut at an awkward, like just below the belly button length, and then it's either gaping or it's too tight and won't go over my arse, and it's a disaster from start to finish.
What I'm hearing though is you literally have like the perfect body shape.
You say that until it comes to jeans.
So Brett is fully incapable of saying anything without suffixing it with the word bro. Oh,
god,
sup bro.
Oh, I also feel like he finishes everything he says with, like, you know. I just feel like this, you know. It's like, ugh, everybody knows. Stop talking.
That's so true. He's saying that interest and feelings are, like, two different tiers of emotion. So he's like, well, yeah, like, I'm interested in Dana, but, like, that doesn't mean I have feelings for her, you know, bro? I mean, what do you think about that? Like, at what point do you think you transition from being interested in someone to having feelings for them?
I don't know. I feel like when you maybe like pre-date, maybe the first time that you meet somebody and you kind of like you have that little bit of banter and stuff, and it makes you kind of think like, oh, you know, I'd probably like to go on a date with this person. I feel like that's the interest level. And then I think maybe date one, date two is when you're like, oh, actually, I kind of like this person. And I think the feelings part transitions into when you'd be pissed off if they put their dick in somebody else.
Yeah, I think so. I think, I don't know if he's interpreting feelings as like wanting a relationship, because to me, feelings is just like, yeah, getting on with someone and being like, oh, I would like to see this person again and spend time with them again.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think it necessarily means that you're like, oh my God, I want to marry this person and live the rest of my life somewhere. But like, you know, it's kind of, I think, having that like respect for them and like wanting them to have that respect for you, where you're not treating it as a game, maybe.
I think as well, from the last episode, the way that he's kind of so aggressive when he's like, no, I don't, like, that was him saying that to the feelings bit, but the fact that he was so aggressive about it to me says, well, I don't think then he's even interested, you know, because yeah. Your reaction to that was so like visceral and pissed off at the suggestion of it, that can you really feel anything for this girl, you know, even if it's like the small, tiny beginnings of something. Otherwise, you would be self-aware enough to not do that in front of her.
Yeah, not like hurt her feelings by saying that, because even if you thought like, you know what, I probably don't really like her. It's just like good common decency to not scream about it at a table. Like, you could be like, well, we haven't really established that yet, and like, I'm not sure of my feelings. Call it a day there, then have a conversation with her afterwards. It's like, hey, maybe this isn't right. Then, done, happy, everybody's mature and finished.
Yeah, exactly. It just seemed like an odd kind of choice.
Yeah, I don't know why Dana was like making all these excuses when she's like, oh, I know what he means, it just came out wrong. And it's like, did it? Is there that many ways that that can come out wrong when you ask if you have feelings for somebody and they boldly say no?
Dana is fully trying to cover for him. And so, you know, I don't like Max, but obviously they had that conversation where he was kind of quite ambiguous and she really came down on him like such a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, you have Brett being arguably a lot more sort of aggressively saying like, no, I'm not into her. And she's like backpedaling for him. So I didn't really get that. Like, I feel like Max's kind of talk left room for some kind of interpretation of like, well, I do like you in some way. I'm just not sure about how to formalize it.
Yeah.
And she wasn't having any of that. But then Brett says something a lot more kind of definitive in my eyes. And she's like, you know, backpedaling.
I just think it's very weird. Like, if I was Dana, by this point, I'd have just called it a day with both of them and been like, fuck all of this.
It seems so exhausting and, like,
doesn't it?
And so Brett says that she's just trying to, like, sink the ship, you know? Now, look, I wasn't aware that there was a ship in this place. Perhaps some kind of rickety canoe, maybe there's some, like, waterproofing issues, paint's kind of been scratched off on the side.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, maybe Sheena's trying to sink your shitty canoe, Brett. Like,
yeah, we're talking more like minor boating incident on a pond rather than Titanic sinking.
Two pedalos grazing past each other clunkily. So then Sheena pops up and she goes up to Brett, who's at the cash desks. And I just love this little moment of like the guy who sticks his head in, sees they're filming and just ducks straight back out again.
I completely missed that. Oh, that's wonderful.
It was quite good. And then Dana fully just cuts off Brett to talk to Sheena. So this was like a weird edit as well. They were like mid-convo and then Brett's literally still finishing a sentence and Dana just goes like, speaking of which, Sheena, to confront her about what went down after the comedy night.
I know, I find it like, that was definitely quite a weird edit, wasn't it? It was like, enough about talking about your guys' stuff, like, I need to interject with what's wrong with me and our situation.
Yeah, it was very out of nowhere. And then Brett says that Max has slept with 5 girls since he sort of stopped seeing Dana. And Peter's like, Jesus, man. In the background.
His little Kermit Froggy input was just so unneeded.
It was. I liked it as a little vignette. But also, okay, like, I'm not trying to defend Max here, but 5 women in 5 weeks, like, is it really that bad? Dana's like, only a sex addict would do this. Now, I would say that's pretty standard to get laid once a week as a single person, pre-lockdown.
Yeah, I don't really know why everybody was, like, super shocked by this. Like, especially, you know, in, like, LA and things like that, and, like, that kind of age and that kind of culture. And, like, when you're single and getting over somebody, it's kind of like, it's just what you do, like, is it always the healthiest coping mechanism? Possibly not, but is it good? Yes. So I don't think this is like, I don't like understand why everybody made this into such a huge deal.
No, this to me felt a bit like blowing things out of proportion. Like 5 women in 5 days, yeah, like you might have a problem, but that's one person a weekend, which if you're going out and like single and looking to meet someone, that's,
yeah.
I would say that's very normal.
No, I definitely would as well. I agree. I don't think this is like a sex addict kind of behavior. If it, like you say, if in 5 people in 5 days or 5 people in like a week or whatever, then maybe, yeah, it's a bit excessive. But also, why does she care? Like, I thought she was under the impression that that was kind of what he did anyway. So I don't know why she's kind of acting all like shocked and betrayed by it.
I don't understand, just from a more kind of general perspective, the shared and supposedly universal investment in Max's feelings.
No, you know, I don't either.
So worried about, like, what does Max think? How is Max feeling? You know, everyone's talking about him. I just don't find that he's that compelling as a person.
I don't, and I think it just proves that he's quite a master manipulator, because he's managed to sort of wheedle into like enough people that like Dana's the one that's being disrespectful to him, whereas like at the end of the day, he was the one that broke up with her. Well, she broke up with him, but then she apologized and gave him the opportunity to kind of work on things. He said no. He made it very clear that he wanted nothing to do with her. And then she went and spoke to him about the Brett thing, which, to be fair, I wouldn't have fucking done.
No, and then, I wouldn't have bothered.
No, I'd just be like, well, you lost any right to have on, like, what I say. Like, yeah, sure, maybe Brett should have gone and spoken to him. But, like, I just, like, wouldn't have. Because I think, well, you lost any right to have any sort of, comment on who I'm sleeping with or dating.
Yeah, like, there's no dialogue to be had.
Yeah, you're like irrelevant at this point. It's not like they were friendly, like they were dating and then weren't dating and that was it. It's not like they have like this great big long deep-rooted friendship to go back to.
So bizarre. So then we go to Max and Schwartz, who are walking up the Villa Rosa sort of driveway, the approach. Schwartz's face, he's so enamored with his surroundings. I quite like this scene. And then they go and they meet Lisa in the kitchen and she's like, maybe have a drink afterwards. And Schwartz's face just lights up so much when he realizes that, like, yes, I can have a drink after this.
Schwartz is truly like the golden retriever of the series, isn't he?
That's the exact energy that he has. It's like floppy dog, kind of adorable, like vaguely annoying, lazy. Yeah. Like you kind of try and drag him out by the leash. Yeah. But he really needs an incentive, you know?
Yeah, he just needs like a tennis ball just waggled in front of his face and his little ears perk up and he goes skipping after whatever you tell him to.
Like, I don't know how far I'm going to go in this metaphor. I was going to say kind of dog that's like quite big, but will just sit on you because it's just so like it doesn't realize its own size. Yeah. And it will just fully kind of like crush you and be super happy about it.
That is such Schwartz energy.
And then Ariana and Tom are at a beauty salon, which is couple goals.
I know. I was so jealous of this. Like, I love the fact that they'll just, like, go to a salon together, get a little facial, get a little massage.
Ariana looks better with a hangover than I have ever looked in my entire life.
Oh, I know. It's so depressing, isn't it? Like, I don't understand how she is that, like, radiant and has such a fantastic complexion year-round.
I'm so happy for her, but it's upsetting for me.
I know, I really take it as like a personal attack.
Tom says that Jack shouldn't expect everyone to have unlimited patience with him. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, just on the basis of what he said about Ariana last episode, I would be super pissed off at him from Sandoval's perspective.
Yeah, I would as well. And I think it is such a valid thing that I think a lot of people haven't even considered. It's like, yeah, people's patience runs out. It doesn't matter if you made a mistake or if you did something by accident, which let's face it, Jack isn't. But even if he was, like, people get fed up and people have boundaries and you can't just keep, like, fucking up and expecting people to just forgive you over and over again. Like, it's such a narcissistic thing to think that you're just entitled to forgiveness.
No, and I also think that when it comes to a partner, like, I will happily go up against anyone that, you know, wants to talk about me. I don't really care what people think. If someone started shit talking my significant other to my face, yeah, I would be furious.
Absolutely. And in such like a calculated, like, meaningless way. Like, it's not in a kind of concerned, like, she seems really miserable or it seems like you guys are fighting, is everything all right? But in that way that Jack is like, well, yeah, I think she's a bitch on many occasions. Like, that's not constructive. That's not caring. That's just name calling for the sake of it.
I mean, I love Sandoval and it pains me to criticize him even a bit. But I think you could possibly argue that Tom hasn't really been a great boyfriend to Ariana, keeping Jax on side up until now, because Jax has been saying this stuff about Ariana for quite some time.
Yeah, this isn't like a newfound opinion that he has of her. Like, he's been saying this for a long time. And if it was me, like, no matter how old my friendship was with somebody, if they were that ruthlessly mean and bitchy about my other half, especially when it's so unfounded, then yeah, I'd be like, I think it's time to just call it a day here.
he says that it's such an unequal relationship. And I think we all know those people in the world that, you know, expect so much from you and then give you so little back in terms of, you know, time, care, attention, emotional investment. Like, we've all been there.
Yeah, 100%. We've all had those friends where it's like they get furious because you don't check in on them every day or don't sort of telepathically know if they're having a hard time. But even when they do know you're having a hard time, they don't check in on you, or they don't kind of ask how you're doing or make plans with you or anything, or they'll just fail on everything and then be pissed off that they're not invited. And it's like, it's such a two-way street to have that kind of respect.
Faith, from now on, I just want you to assume that I'm always just not having a good time. Just assume that I'm fucking miserable.
I think it's a safe assumption for both of us. I think it's why we work as a dynamic, is we're just cripplingly depressed at all given time.
It's funny because it's true. I found this meme the other day of that like weird walking cat, and it's like, mother says it's my turn for the serotonin. It's just like, same.
Oh god.
But yeah, I completely agree. You know, we've all been there, and like you say, it's always those people that are then so surprised when, you know, people kind of cut them out or decide to sort of disengage with them. And so this is the exact dynamic that we see playing out between Tom and Jax, and you can tell that Tom is losing his patience with it.
I know, and I'm, to be honest, I'm amazed that it's taken them like 20 years for him to kind of go, hey, enough's enough.
Yeah. And so we go back to Max, Tom and Lisa around the kitchen table, and Max is kind of explaining the situation with Dana. It's just kind of weird that Lisa's like getting involved in this. Like, this goes back to the thing of like, we like it when she's the puppet master, not when she's getting, you know, in the trenches with these 20 something year olds being like, who had sex with whom again?
I know, and like Lisa's sort of commitment to keeping up with like the sordid happenings of her staff is like, I don't know whether it's commendable or slightly creepy.
But surely she gets intel, you know that Peter's in her ear. Like, I think Peter probably has more of a role on the show than we all think, and that I reckon he, you know, he's kind of feeding things, he's kind of keeping an eye on emerging storylines, because he is literally there working at Sir. So I don't see that we need this playing out on camera.
No, 100%. And I think Peter is definitely kind of like a closeted puppet master here. Like, he's the one that's like writing down the details and dishing the dirt to Lisa, they can like produce and direct the story in the appropriate way.
Everyone thinks that Peter is Kermit, but the real puppets was the cast all along.
Oh god.
Sheena Dobbs Stassi in for her like snobby comments about the lack of furniture to Ariana, and I did like Ariana's like credit score comment in her testimonial.
Stassi bad credit Schroeder.
I mean, I don't even own a credit card. Like, I don't trust myself. So
I'm
comment.
Exactly the same. I've never got one. I keep getting them sporadically through the post of like an offer of one. And every time I just bid them, because I'm like, no, I don't trust myself. All I know that would happen is I'd be like, oh, well, I'm just going to use it to get some groceries and then I'll pay it straight off. And I'm like, oh, I just, you know, I could just get something on here and then I'll pay it off because it makes my credit score better. And before I know it, I bought like a fucking car and a holiday. And I'm like, well, that didn't work out.
Yeah, exactly. It would just be a slow but steady escalation. Tom ages backwards, okay? If he's getting Botox, he's pulling it off. He doesn't look too plastic. He is glowing. He's the prince of my dreams.
Tom's managed to find that perfect balance of like, he has like the faintest sort of suggestion of a wrinkle that stops him looking too plasticky, but he's still so smooth and youthful, and I don't know how he's done it.
I think he's just got an excellent bone structure, and I think he's got powerful brows.
He does have power brows. I love him so much. Also, this whole scene of him and, like, Ariana made me miss the idea of just having, like, a massage or a facial or something, even just my eyebrows being threaded, which is hideous and like makes my eyes water. But even just that kind of like pampering thing, I was like, God, I miss the outside world.
I know, because like it's just not the same doing a facial on yourself.
It's not, because it's not relaxing, because you're like, yeah, I might be massaging this, but now my hands are tired.
Can't you get Greg to give you a back rub or something?
Yeah, but it kind of, the novelty wears off after a while, because you're like, oh no, I really just want like the full like spa kind of aromatherapy oils and the peaceful music and the white linen, the sort of warmed duvet thing. I'm like, it's not the same when there's dogs on the bed and my face is like pressed into the mattress, which is covered in dog hair.
Sexy. Oh, and I love how spa music is, it's always like a CD on like a 20-year-old stereo. Maybe that just shows you the kind of shitty spas I'm used to going to.
No, it is though. It's so true. Apart from, I went for a Clarins one and they'd upgraded to an iPod. I mean, it was like one of those iPod, was it an iPod Touch where it was kind of pink and like long and thin?
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, it was proper retro.
Oh my God, I remember those. I found my iPod Classic, like 126 gig the other day that I had wrapped, by the way, in like a leopard print sticker.
Phenomenal.
Of course.
What was the commitment to a print?
So 2010.
I love my iPod. I have, like, I've still got the charger for it and everything. I keep meaning to listen to it.
Yeah, you should boot it back up. There's something really nice about it. And I loved how you had to be so selective about your music, whereas now I feel like with Apple Music, I'll just add anything.
Yeah, I'm literally, I just listen. I just listen to Spotify. And because there's literally just anything I could ever hope and dream of, I find myself just sort of sticking religiously to music that happened between about 2001 and 2008 and like the golden era of music. I won't listen
so
to
bad. It's not just me.
it's the only decade I'll listen to, and maybe some 80s if I'm having a particularly upbeat day. But apart from that, I'm just like heavy into like the Avril Lavigne and all the kind of like slightly cheesy joke songs that came out, like Last Ketchup and things like that.
But that's feel good and it's nostalgia, and like we all need to be going to that safe place.
Yeah.
We then transition to Lala and Randall's house. So she's decided that they need to move in together given their engagement.
I mean, I think it's possibly time.
This seemed like a sensible move.
Yeah. I also thought that they like lived together anyway though.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought that. I thought it was very strange that she objected to the toothbrushes on the counter.
Oh, see, I mean,
I think not just randomly on the counter. They were in like a toothbrush holder.
I can almost understand that. I think because the bathroom is so sparse and so empty, it was so jarring just to have them there. And I'd have probably been exactly like her and been like, could we not just put them away?
No, I'm sorry. That's psychopathic to have to like go into a drawer to access your... No, I can't cope with that. Kristen has been rage texting Stassi. I mean, Stassi seems so surprised by this, and it's kind of like, oh, are we just forgetting that you've bullied her this entire season?
I know. And I still have this really conflicted feeling, because I feel like I sort of understand like the Stassi and Katie side of things, but I just think their handling of it was poor. So I kind of have this really conflicted thing where, like, I sort of get what they're saying. I just wish they were saying it in a much more nicer way.
Yeah, with a bit more empathy.
Yeah. Because it is shit.
Brittany's half-ton shirt was, like, a hybrid of all of the shirts that Brett wore over the last episode. So it was kind of, like, half-ton, half-plaid, and then half chambray denim. I hated it.
Oh God, I loathe chambray denim, possibly more than any other fabric.
It's light denim, unless it's like an acid wash, greyish kind of vibe. I'm not into.
But especially when it's got that kind of like that sheen to it as well, where you can like, it just makes it look cheaper, and I hate it.
Yeah, the texture's not nice.
No,
it's like a very low quality.
Yeah, it's kind of like a proper like high street misguided kind of vibe. Denim.
Definitely. And then Katie asks Brittany if they buried the hatchet about the rage texting comment, and Brittany kind of tries to deflect it. She's like, well, Jax is really struggling at the moment, oh, I can't do it. Why am I trying to do a Southern accent? And she's like, Jax really recognized the behavior in himself.
That was good. That was really good.
I'll get there.
But I mean, she will just blindly defend him. Like, she's saying that, like, he recognizes it and is fixing it. It's like, but he isn't. His version of recognizing it is going like, oh, I lost control of all my emotions and actions and was just therefore a colossal dickhead to everybody. But, you know, I've said that I was, so it's fine. And it's like, no, you're not taking responsibility for it. You're just saying these words fell out of my mouth and I had no control over them.
But Jax thinks acknowledging that he sometimes does things wrong is the same as repenting for them. So he's like, yeah, but I know that. I admitted that. I confessed that. And it's like, yeah, there's a difference between acknowledging it and like actively trying to make up for it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that kind of when like somebody's like, oh yeah, you should like, I should go to therapy probably, but it's like, but just because you've acknowledged that you want to go to therapy or think you should doesn't mean you've actually gone to therapy and fixed things. You've just said, hey, yeah, you know what, I could probably do with a psych.
Yeah, it's like the most basic kind of, it's not even step one of like recovering and making up for it. It's kind of like the preamble.
Yeah, because it's not even admitting that you have a problem. It's just saying that like, hey, these problematic things happen around me that I may or may not be a part of.
We then find ourselves in James and Raquel's flat, which actually looks really nice.
It does. I'm quite surprised. I thought neither of them would have had sufficient taste to make it look so nice.
No, or just the money to rent somewhere. But I guess they've been quite present. James has been on the show for quite a few seasons. So
yeah, I guess.
Money coming in.
We had the return of White Kanye's mum.
Yeah. We learned that she has also embarked on a journey to sobriety.
Which I think is quite nice. And it's nice that they're doing it together. And I must admit, she looks healthier than the last time she was on screen.
I thought she looked really good, aside from the chambray denim.
Yeah, which is clearly having a moment in Hollywood and cannot be forgiven.
And we learned that she had a cancer scare as well. And I just thought, oh my God, watching this, can you imagine your ability or your right to have a mammogram being completely defined by your employment status?
I literally wrote stuff down about this as well, because I thought this was just one of the most like horrifying things that I'd never even really thought of. And it's like, never mind the treatment and stuff, like not even being able to find out whether you've got it or not. Like, it should be such a fundamental right to be able to find out if you're sick or not. And the idea that you can't, based on whether or not you've got the finances, is just such a wild, wild comparison for me. It's insane.
I've spent a lot of time in the States growing up. I love the States. I love America. You know, I like Americans. Mostly all of the Americans that I've come into contact with have been absolutely lovely people. They also love the Brits, which is, you know, oh, great. I would never say I was from Belgium, because they it's like,
well, falls under the Europe umbrella.
Like, yeah, kind of, sure, why not? We speak French. Half of us speak French. It's a long story.
It all just falls under the Europe umbrella.
But I don't know if I could live somewhere where, you know, going to the doctor is going to incur a cost.
I know. I've always said this as well, because I'm the same. Like, I love the idea in theory of living in America, especially somewhere like New York or something like that, where it's like very sort of like metropolitan and very forward thinking and progressive and that sort of thing. And I love the idea in theory. I've always enjoyed it when I've visited. Like you say, I've always met like really, really nice people. But again, the idea of living somewhere where it's like, if I got hit by a car, I'd have to weigh up my choices between having my life saved or being permanently in debt for the rest of my life.
It's insane. I mean, my chest condition, because I've been lots of like Facebook groups and stuff for people that suffer from the same thing. So it's called primary spontaneous pneumothorax. It basically means that your lungs can collapse at any point. There are things that you can do to like avoid it from happening. Obviously, things like not smoking, you know, not living in like a super polluted area. But for the grand kind of scheme of things, it's not like a treatable thing. Like if it's going to happen to you, it's going to happen. And so you have to get a chest drain fitted, which sucks out the excess air. from your chest cavity. Now, in America, they fit the drain and then they send you home with it, with tube literally going. I mean, mine is my left lung that always collapses. So you'd be sent home with a drain, a massive tube, basically going right like behind your heart into your chest, like into your lung wall.
Oh my God.
And then send you home for a week with that. You know, can you imagine if it catches on something or something gets infected? And so actually they also tried to discharge me with it once in England. And I just said, no, I'm not leaving the hospital. You know, I live alone. My parents were like in the process of getting over, but I was like, I'm not going to go home and be alone in an apartment with a chest drain. I'm sorry. Yeah. And in America, that is just the standard, you know, unless you wanted to spend tens of thousands of dollars on being an inpatient.
That's just so, so insane. And I mean, I'd have had something similar where it's like when I had my back operation. So mine wasn't like a hereditary thing. I just slipped three discs and like, they were saying it could be genetics, it could have been from like horse riding and falls and that sort of thing, but they basically trapped my nerve that went all the way down into my legs, so I couldn't really walk very well, and like one of my legs didn't really function very well, so I had like a proper like dragging my foot behind me kind of a limp, and there was a few times where it's like I'd laid a certain way and I'd ended up like sort of paralyzing myself from the waist down, and I had to go to hospital. And it was like, I had to wait for an ambulance to come get me. They had to take me into A&E. And even then, even in England, we had to sit in A&E while I literally couldn't feel anything from the waist down for like 4 or 5 hours while they like looked after people before me and stuff. But all I could think about was just like, I'm so glad I don't have to pay for this.
I know. It's like, God bless the NHS.
Like. I know. And yeah, because I had to have like full on like spinal surgery, and I had a drain that went like through into like through the nerve sac that runs down your spine. I went through that and then like into my spine bit, and it was the same thing where it was like out my back, and I was just like, I'm not being left alone with this is so disgusting and so like horrible to have to like, carry to the toilet and that kind of thing. So
yeah,
I can't even imagine being sent home with that.
We pay our health service in claps every Thursday.
Yeah. Claps for the NHS, guys.
And like the thing is, taxes aren't even that high in the UK. Like I'm obviously they're gonna have to raise taxes, and I'm not happy about it, because as a self-employed person, like, you know, it's always difficult whenever taxes go up because they can't get it from the big companies. But like, income tax in Belgium is like 60%. Do you know what I mean? Like, no. The UK is not that bad for taxes, and yet we still get that kind of treatment. So
incredible.
I thought this was a really nice scene. It was like a really tender moment. James like genuinely kind of emotes. And it's nice because it sounds like his mum's already basically been given the all clear and their relationship is on the mend.
I know. So I thought this was kind of a really nice like conclusion for James's little story arc that he's been on. And I do, like I say, more and more every week, I keep warming to him and I'm resisting it as much as I can. But
I think the overarching theme of this season has been, I think you've got the two parallels. I think you've got Jax and Brittany not changing, and in some ways Stassi and Katie not changing and, you know, continuing to kind of act as they act. And then I think you have the stories of kind of personal growth and development of James and to a slightly lesser extent, Kristen. But even when you see how she handles the confrontation at the Tom Tom party, you know, she doesn't flip out. She stays very calm. She stays very collected. So there's been progress there.
That is true, actually. I'd never really thought about that, but it is interesting because they were both, like James and Kristen, both probably my absolute least favorite characters like going into this series. Like, couldn't really bear either of them. Like, they weren't for me. But as this season's gone on, like, I'm so resistant again to liking them. I'm very set in my ways, but I do feel myself like warming more and more to them. And I think it is just seeing that kind of like human level of growth and that kind of willingness to go, hey, do you know what, yeah, I was a, you know, a bitch, or I was a drunk, and I was this, that, and the other. But this is how I've handled it, and I've came out as a better person, and it's so endearing. You can't help but like them more for it.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's kind of why we watch reality TV as well. A lot of it is about flawed characters and people working through stuff. And that, for me, I think, is where I see the humanity of James and of Kristen, because you know, I don't know that I've necessarily been in like a super messy breakup like Kristen. I'm more kind of clean break. I'll just cut people out. But I've certainly been in a place where I haven't felt kind of strong enough to be alone. And I've kind of stayed in things that I shouldn't have stayed in for longer because they were comforting to me. And I think that's quite a universal thing.
Definitely. I mean, we've all been guilty of doing that to like some degree or another, where we've kind of gone like, this is probably the time that I should get out. But you always have that what if, or kind of like a fear of it being over or fear of being alone. So you sort of try to make it work for longer than really it should be. So yeah. I think that is like a very relatable thing.
Stassi and Beau go to view a house. Oh, it's so nice.
It was stunning. I was literally like mouth agape at this house.
It's got kind of like a mid-century feel to it, and it's quite scaled back and minimal. But what I liked about it was it didn't feel like clinical and sterile, you know, because yeah. It has the wood and it had the big windows.
I love a big window.
I can see Stassi in a kind of European townhouse sort of vibe, some character, kind of French windows, original mouldings.
Definitely. Like, and I kind of thing. Yeah, and I sort of, I love that Beau said like they both wanted it to not be one of those like thrown up McMansion kind of things, because I have such a disdain for them because they're always so void of personality. So I think like this house and the house that they've ended up buying is like so beautiful, and it's like, oh, it's like my dream house.
Yeah, it's really nice. I kind of like a bit of property porn as well, so I was happy that they included that in there.
I do as well. It's like I love watching $1 million listing.
So good.
Incredible. So incredible.
I spent a lot of time on the Sotheby's Realty website.
Yes, I found a house in there the other day actually, and it was only £200,000 at auction, and it was this full like stately home in like the Welsh countryside. I mean, it would have needed like bill to redo it, but it was phenomenal.
I don't know, I say just move in somewhere like that and just renovate as you go.
Yeah. Just make one room livable.
My parents nearly bought, I'll never forgive them for this, they nearly bought a chateau.
Stop.
God, I sound so posh. They nearly bought a chateau in France when they were looking for a place there. But it was essentially cheaper than a two-bedroom apartment in Newcastle. The reason that it was so cheap was because it was a former brothel.
Amazing.
So no one in the village wanted it because it used to be called Club Paradise.
I love that. I'd move it.
Prince was like, well, that's hilarious. Like, what an origin story.
Yeah.
And also, so I think it was an artist that was living in it. And there had been some like dodgy Vanderpump adjacent goings on where basically half of it burned down in like possibly a scam, like insurance scam, but like yeah. No one really knows. So literally only half of it was livable, but half of it was the most stunning thing that you can imagine. It had the most beautiful pool. So they went to visit it, they loved it, and they were like, even though it's half burnt down, it's still an amazing space. And like, you could have just left half of it as just like uninhabitable, or you could have gone through and renovated it kind of slowly but surely. The reason they didn't go for it and they didn't put in an offer was because they were building the newest kind of high speed train line literally at the bottom of the garden.
No.
So it had these beautiful big grounds, but even if your grounds are, you know, like, whatever, 10 acres or whatever it was, you know, if you have a freaking high speed rail, you know, like 5 minutes walk down your back garden, like that's going to be super noisy, super annoying. Yeah, so they debated it, but because they had this railway line that was going to get built in the background, they decided not to. And then anyway, the person that ended up buying it turned it into like a bed and breakfast, and it's really beautiful, but I'll never really forgive them for for turning down the chateau. And it was literally, it was like, I think it was like €350,000. It was like,
that is so insane.
I know.
My parents have started getting to that point as well now, where they keep looking at like little sort of like slightly run down farmhouses in like Portugal and things like that, and they're like, oh, just sell everything, like move to some like foreign, lovely, hot, sunny country or whatever. And I'm like, if you fucking leave me, if you've done this when I could have been young and growing up in like the French countryside or something, I'll never forgive you.
Yeah, it's nice though. I think let them do it, because it's so nice to be able to go and visit them somewhere warm, because Brussels is so rainy. So it's nice that now occasionally, well, I haven't actually been to France in like 2 years, 2.5 years, because we've just never like crossed over. But I have on my weather app, like their village that they live in.
Yeah.
It's like 30 degrees yesterday.
Oh, I was my like, God.
The dream.
Oh, I love that.
Anyway, I can see Stacey and Beau in a like little French farmhouse.
Yeah, I can so see that.
Like when they retire.
Yeah, lots of character, lots of land. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed getting to see the house hunting, because I kind of wish we'd got to see a little bit more of that before this season when everybody moved into like their houses. Because I mean, it kind of just like was like, oh, hi, new season. Everybody owns a house now. And I kind of would have liked to see the bits around that.
Yeah, that's a big part of why I watch these shows, because I like to see like, yeah, it's like property porn. It's like money porn, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like the real stuff as well, where it's kind of like you just live vicariously through them. But I did also like Stassi's little dig about the everybody moving into like the Valley farmhouse style houses.
Yeah.
the three of like the two Toms and Jax's house, and they were all absolutely identical.
As a snob myself, I did enjoy that.
Same.
So then we go to a business meeting about the TomTom expansion. Nicolaine is back. The plans kind of look like the lobby of a 4-star hotel in like any major European city, with those long hanging pendant lights, a lot of like exposed brick.
Yeah, a lot of greenery. And it was that thing, like it was beautiful, but it kind of didn't feel like anything very special.
It just wasn't that different, I think. You know, it felt somewhat formulaic.
And I feel like with the kind of money that Lisa has and that sort of thing, like they can afford to be outside the box and a little bit quirky and do something that's really, truly different. And I think it would pay off so much better. Like they have enough of these kind of like paint by numbers restaurants that obviously work really well. So if I was them, I'd have gone all out and been like, let's make this one weird and wacky and fun.
Yeah. And I feel like if you're going to call it the garden at TomTom, like bring some of that greenery inside, make that a feature.
100%. I also noticed this woman that was just like there.
That's Nicolaine's wife.
Is it? Because she was just holding Jiggy and having nothing to do with anything. And I was like, is this just another woman that Lisa's hired to sort of hold the dogs for her while she's in important meetings?
Jiggy's ventriloquist has changed shifts. No, I'm pretty sure that's Nicolaine's wife. She's gorgeous.
She is. I mean, that was what I thought as well, though, when I was looking at her. I was like, she doesn't look like the kind of woman who'd be just like an on-hand dog handler.
So then it's the day of the Hollywood Reporter photo shoot. Okay, so one thing that really annoyed me about this, why is Max being so weird about Cara being there? Like, are we in high school? Is it that odd to bump into someone you had a one-night stand with? Like, he's making it so much more awkward than it needs to be.
I thought this too. Like, surely, like, considering who he is, where he lives, what his private life is like, this cannot be the first person that he's slept with that he's bumped into. And I don't understand why he freaked out so much about it, especially because he was told that she was coming anyway.
Yeah, it's not like it was a surprise. Yeah. But I did like that Sheena and Cara hit it off and they're like completely vibing over their similarities.
And teeting their little, like bonding over being dick sisters and taking their selfies together. And oh, it was truly, they were meant to be friends, weren't they?
Yeah, they're both stuck in 2010.
Yeah.
Lisa is sucking up to Lala so much now.
Why?
She's like, don't ever stop giving them Lala.
Oh, I just don't understand this weird banter that they have. Like, Lisa, you're better than this.
I don't know if it's because Lala has risen through the ranks and actually has like an established husband and has kind of money by proxy now.
Quite possibly. Maybe Lisa thinks of her more as like on an equal playing field now than she used to.
Sorry, by the way, I'm like half having my cafe latte from Starbucks, but it's like, it, you know, it's one of those prepackaged ones, but it's one that you like stick the straw into, and I think it keeps making weird like sucking noises. So what I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna open the lid so I can just drink it directly, because any strange sounds.
If it's any consolation, I hadn't noticed.
Oh, okay. I just couldn't tell if you were getting like weird sort of
slurpy vibes,
slurping noises. Jax is like, yeah, I'm good with Sandoval, whatever, but he's like rolling his eyes and shrugging his shoulders, and Lala's like, well, have you spoken about it? And he's like, oh, about what? He's like, well, I don't know, like, you're the one that's been going on about this for weeks.
It's wild. Like, Jax just lives in this bubble where he can say something 2-3 seconds ago and it's already irrelevant, and he already pretends that he doesn't know what you're talking about. He's like a master of gaslighting.
Yeah, he's literally gaslighting everyone, not just Brittany.
And half the time, it's like, I don't know if he's genuinely, like, thinks that he's, like, knows that he's gaslighting them, or whether he just genuinely lives in such a narcissistic bubble that he believes it.
It's hard to tell how far his delusion goes.
Like, how deep-rooted it truly is.
Lisa is being flanked by the Toms. They're like two proud seated lions at the gates of a stately manor.
She is rocking these crystal ties at the minute, though. They've definitely become her, like, signature.
Sorry, you know what it is? It's the straw. I'm still struggling. Right, straw has been disposed of. Yeah, I think now it's gone a bit far.
Yeah,
like, she transitioned from the awful like satin blouses with Swarovski detailing into the chunky crystal ties, and the like white waistcoat as well. That was a weird look.
Yeah, the whole look was a bit kind of like Las Vegas casino dealer kind of thing. Like she should have had like a pet tiger and have been wheeled around by somebody.
That is so accurate. That is what she looks like, because it's not androgyny, because it's just got like a sprinkle of Liberace in it. Yes. It's not like a boxy manly suit, but that's like fitted in all the right places. It genuinely has shades of like, yeah, like circus or blackjack. What are they called? Croupier.
Yes, a croupier. It's like a Liberace croupier. Which I don't think it should be a vibe that anybody's really going for.
No, and even Lisa, who is stunning and has a beautiful body, it just kind of looks cheap.
Exactly. And like, I bet that tie cost possibly more than my year's worth of rent. And yet it looks so tacky and cheap.
It's the problem with crystals.
I know. They have to be done so, so specifically to not look horrendous. And even then, you have to kind of accept that they're going to look at least kitschy, probably tacky.
Yeah, and you have to lean into the kitschiness and kind of take it in that direction.
Yeah, like it has to be an intentional thing. Otherwise, it just looks sad.
Ariana comes up to talk to Jax, and she can barely conceal her hatred.
I live for Ariana's just like utter lack of fear around Jax. There is not a fuck to give. She doesn't even try to pander to him. She doesn't even try and sort of like sugar it up a little bit with some niceties. She is just the pure, pure hatred of him.
It's throughout this entire conversation, she looks visibly disgusted. Like, you know, when you're just walking along the street and you get like a whiff of bin juice.
Oh yes, or like an overflowing sewer.
Yeah, and you do like a little like a little face scrunch. That's what she looks like in this entire conversation. Obviously still looking more beautiful than, you know, anyone that's ever existed.
I know, she looked flawless. Although I wasn't keen on that dress, but she did look flawless.
No, the dress wasn't a big mood. Fashion-wise, I feel like the Vanderpump lot leave a lot to be desired.
They do. I mean, Lala tries really hard to be kind of fashion-y and avant-garde, but she kind of just goes a bit Kardashian-y.
Lala can sometimes... I really liked that kind of etro, paisley, silky, belted dress. You know, that was nice. But then she does go when she goes like just skin tight leopard print, it's like, we get it, you're hot, you know?
Yeah, like your body is phenomenal. It's fine, move on.
Yeah. Next.
Not that I'm bitter.
Thank you. So she notes that taking the high road with Jax hasn't really worked over the years, and Jax's immediate recourse is, what, I'm not allowed to make a mistake? It's kind of like, how many mistakes realistically is one permitted to make? So Ariana points out very adeptly, I thought, that a series of mistakes is a pattern, and a pattern tells you a lot about the personality of a person.
I love this as well, and I just love that essentially she was like, this is your personality, this is who you are, these aren't mistakes, you're making these choices.
Yeah, or you know, even if they are mistakes, like there's only so many you can make before they become inextricably linked with your character. Like there must be, you make certain decisions because of something within you.
Exactly. And I mean, just shown by that montage of like, just from this season alone, all the things that Jax has said about her and all the people that were like standing up for her as well, it just proves that he has this very weird, misguided, jaded perception of Ariana that I can't understand.
Yeah, and you can see even in the way that they're having this conversation, you can tell that he's just kind of mentally checked out from it.
Yeah.
He's rolling his eyes.
Yeah, he just thinks this whole conversation is like so beneath him, and he's so much better than having this kind of chat. And it's just like, you can tell that Ariana kind of almost takes that more personally than anything else, is the fact that she's just like, oh, well, whatever. And she does that little like flicky bye thing and off she goes.
I just love that Jax, you know, he loves to roll his eyes and huff his shoulders and be like, I don't care, I'm not interested. But then it's like, Jax, why do you take every single opportunity to weigh in with your two cents in every single situation?
Exactly. Like, if you're not bothered, why are you talking about it? It's like Dorinda from, like, Roni. If you're saying all this time that you don't care and it's so beneath you and, like, you just don't give a shit about this person, then why are you talking about them?
Yeah, it's counterintuitive.
Absolutely.
We then get treated to another supremely wooden Max and Brett scene where they kind of simulate friendship. I mean, I don't know about you, but to me, it's like these two kind of lanky, slightly greasy aliens came to Earth. They found a dictionary and like a dusty old chest buried in the woods. And they're trying to recreate what they think a man-to-man bond might look like without ever having experienced anything remotely like it before. Do you know what I mean? It's like they have a vague sense of like, bro, I don't know, dude. You know, they kind of like vaguely know the direction that they need to take it in, but they're just both coming at it from like, it just doesn't translate. I don't know.
No, I completely agree. And I think you're so spot on the money there. It's like, it's so bizarre listening to them kind of talk to each other because it's so like surface level. There's no depth to it at all. And it's so just like, they're just words that they're saying to each other. It doesn't mean anything. They're just saying words backwards and forwards with like the vaguest hint of like inflection in them.
Okay, so I've realized that Max only speaks in like complete abstractions about everything, right? Max will just make contradictions. He's like, you know, the Dada artists where it's just like, you just talk nonsense. Brett, on the other hand, can't talk about anything without just pulling like some kind of strangely elaborate metaphor into things. And I think between the abstractness of Max's communication and like the disembodied similes of Brett's, there's like nowhere in the Venn diagram where it's overlapping to make sense. These guys never want to come out with a firm statement lest it be held against them.
Yes, oh my god, that's it. Like, I can't put my finger on it. And I actually wrote down pretty much exactly what you said about Max, where he just talks in like fucking abstract riddles that mean nothing. But it is literally that, as they don't ever want to say anything that can then be used against them.
You know what it is? It's like, so, you know, you're like seeing someone and you kind of want to initiate a conversation about like, okay, so like, what is this? And they don't want to say like, oh, I want to see other people or whatever. So they'll kind of be like, look, I really like you, but, you know, maybe we just, and they kind of try and keep things in that gray area, because if they say something that's kind of black or white, that you'll either be like, okay, well, let's end it, or, you know, okay, let's formalize this and let's make it a relationship or whatever. So they try and keep you in that gray area so that when they text you at like 3 a.m. saying, hey, you up, that you're still gonna like answer and give them the benefit of the doubt. That is what these guys are like.
That is literally them to a T and a fine art. That is they are both the you up guy.
Because, yeah, they know that if they say something concrete, like, you're either going to peace out of the situation or you're going to be like, okay, cool, like, let's go all in.
Yeah.
So just kind of keep things really, like, vague to just kind of push their luck as far as they can take it.
Yes, and it's that total lack of, like, commitment to truly to anything.
It's very blah.
Yeah. And blah is just, like, blah and vague is so much worse than even just, like, out and out dickheadedness. I'd much rather somebody was just to the point rude about something than exist in this kind of wishy-washy, like, well, yeah, but maybe, but I mean, what do you think? Because I don't know, I just think, oh, and you just think, like, you're not saying anything. It's like a fucking word salad. I hate it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, in any kind of situation, like, even with friends, like, I would rather someone just be like, you're being annoying, don't talk to me right now. What I hate sometimes about, like, female friends is that they're so, like, I have genuinely just asked people, like, have I done something to upset you? And, like, what is the problem? Because not even in a mean way. It's like, genuinely, if I upset someone, like, I would like to know what I did, and then I can, like, try and be better.
Yeah.
Or try and not do that. But I find that women sometimes are so unwilling to just be upfront with you and to, you know, it's like lots of dancing around in circles. And it's like, mate, I can take it. Like, it's, you know, I'm a lot more hurt by someone going behind my back and saying something than someone coming to me. And I actually have a really close friend where we kind of drifted apart for a bit. And, you know, one day I did ask her and I was like, hey, like, did you dislike me at that point? And she was like, yeah, actually I did, because you were doing this and, like, blah, blah, blah. You know, that annoyed me. And I was like, I'm so glad that you said that, because, you know, now I can kind of stop myself from being like that. I mean, you know, it still hurts to hear, but it hurts a lot less than someone just kind of bitching about you behind your back for years and not knowing what you've done wrong.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also so much better than, like, the ghosting kind of thing where people just kind of stop replying to you and kind of just have this, like, vague sense of an ending of a friendship or relationship, but without there ever being a concrete reason, because you spend so much time torturing yourself going, well, what did I do? Was I being, like, annoying? Was I rude? Did I do something that upset them? Like, has somebody told them something that's not true? Like, I'd so much rather somebody just turn around and was like, I think you're a bit of a bitch. Sorry.
Like, yeah, or like, oh, listen, we've drifted apart and, like, we're leading different lives. There's nothing wrong with that.
I know, and I think it's such, like, an underrated thing, but it's so true, where it's like, sometimes you just reach a point where you are just in a completely different mental space, physical space, like, part of your life. And some people just don't align with that anymore. And it's fine. That shit happens. You can have been friends for like 20 years. Sometimes you just don't become the same people.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely agree. And I think, again, that's why it's interesting to see this kind of wrapping up of Tom and Jax, because there seems to be kind of a fork in the road in some sense.
Definitely.
And so they're getting all together to get posed for the photo shoot, and Jax is being a prima donna about wearing a navy shirt. He's kind of giving Lisa some lip.
Oh, I can't believe he had the audacity to be petulant about a fucking shirt.
So at this point she pulls him aside for a heart to heart, and he pulls out the same rehearsed speech that he's been rolling out every fucking season since this show started. Hasn't he?
He literally does. And I also just can't believe when he's just like, he was going on like, oh, well, like I'm just one of the bartenders. I'm so much better than one of the bartenders. And it's just like this such misguided sense of grandeur that he has.
It's bizarre. He is Dubois.
I did love that Lisa kind of told Brittany to stop defending him.
Yeah, and I like that Lisa gives him some real talk where she's like, well, actually, I do know because I've been married to Ken for 37 years. And she basically just tells him to buck up his ideas and take care of Brittany. Like, you know, it's not just about you anymore. Like, it's about both of you. And
yeah,
like,
I kind of love that she was just like, she was like, oh, like, it's not the Jack show anymore. Like, you need to be a partnership sort of thing, which, again, I think is just something that Jax can hear until the cows come home, but it'll never actually mean anything to him.
And again, I have such limited sympathy for Brittany because she's, you know, she knows this.
I know, and she knew exactly what she's marrying. Like, she's either blind or stupid or acting. Like,
or all three.
Or all three of them together. There was a bit where Brittany said something, and it sounded like she said, don't stop being gay again. Like, and I've seen quite a few things on, like, other podcasts and stuff where they've been talking about this. And it's the scene where Jax is, like, storming around about the shirt. And she's like, Jax, don't start being gay again. And then he, like, loses his temper a bit. And it's like, what did he say? What did she say?
That's interesting.
Isn't it?
Because I do think Jax has possibly experimented with men, and I don't see that there's any problem with that, but I can see Brittany having a problem with that.
Yeah, I do as well. And I mean, because even in Schwartz's speech, was it at their engagement party or their something, when Brittany's mum was there, and Schwartz like alluded to that guy that used to live with Jax, and there's all those rumours about him being gay.
Mm.
And you could see like her mum and Brittany were like mortified.
Yeah, it's kind of like those clashing. That's where you really see like the Kentucky background clashing with like the LA contemporary reality.
Exactly. And I think Brittany's desire to be on TV just outweighs her good old Southern Kentucky values.
And I also think she's the kind of person that would use like that's gay as an insult.
Yeah, oh, 100%.
And I don't think that means that she's homophobic, or I don't think she is like homophobic as a general rule, because I'm sure that she has loads of friends in LA who are, but like the pastor and just like small things like that that point to like a very deeply ingrained, you know, even if she kind of overrides it in areas of her life, there's still parts of her upbringing that are going to show through in some of those actions, or in like not questioning the fact that this pastor was like very openly homophobic.
Absolutely. And like you say, like, I don't think it comes from like a hatred place or a kind of that true homophobia thing, but I think it comes from such like a deeply ignorant kind of mindset of her upbringing, of like thinking that gay people are wrong and this sort of thing. And even if she doesn't necessarily think that, she's also not quick to call out bullshit around it either.
It's the double standard of like, but I have gay friend. I
yeah.
Gays.
It is that classic Southern thing. It's like, well, you know, the man that cuts my hair is gay, so I can't be homophobic.
Yeah, yeah. Or like, I don't know, my grandmother, she's like all on board for gay men, but like can't get her head around a lesbian couple. She's like, oh no, that's just too much. But you know, yeah. she's got, you know, like my gay sort of second uncle or whatever, and that's fine.
Yeah, because it's something that's
like art and the opera, you know, so that's all right.
Yeah.
So we go to the Tom Tom party. The Toms rock up in their motorcycle and sidecar setup.
When are they going to let that die? I can't believe that Tom spent like 10 grand on that.
I supported him in that. We learn that Kristen and Carter are sort of officially back dating, although obviously we know that that doesn't last.
Yes, I was going to say, because she has a new other half now, doesn't she? Thank God.
She does. Stacey is wearing a Diamante hair clip of her name.
I'm not going to lie to you, Lou. I have one of my name too.
But I'm not sure how I feel about this.
But also, I would point out that my name is also just a word and therefore was far easier to come by, and I didn't have to pay money for it to be specifically made. I could just buy it from AliExpress for like 70 pence.
Did yours come in like a biblical virtues pack of like, yes, faith, prudence, perseverance?
Oh God, I wish.
Modesty, faith.
I might just wear them all in my hair like Dorit did at the reunion of the year.
I would like to see your hair clip.
I will show you it. I'll send you a photo on WhatsApp.
Okay, love that. I really feel, and I know you don't like Kristen, but I feel that Kristen has progressed beyond the need for Katie and Stassi.
I do as well. Like, I feel like their friendship has reached like a kind of slightly forced but natural end. Like, I don't think she needs their friendship. I think she could do better on her own without them, with a different group of friends. I just think it's sad that we never see any of her other friends. Like, she never really interacts with anybody except Sheena.
Yeah, I think Kristen is going through like the painful sort of grieving process of realizing that maybe she's been pushed out. I mean, I kind of had a similar situation about 2 years ago. And it is like a breakup, I think. Actually, for me, it felt worse than any romantic breakup I've ever been in. But you do just kind of have to come out the other end and realize that, you know, sometimes people just make a decision that they're going to disengage with you to some extent, and you can fight back against it up into a point, but if they're not going to change their mind about it, then, you know, there's really no use, and you need to reallocate your energy somewhere else.
Yeah, like, I'm never really down for the whole like begging somebody to be either my partner or my friend or whatever. I just think I don't want to have to force like kind of friendship. There's plenty of people out there that would be, you know, thrilled to be my friend. So I don't need to convince this one person that their life would be better off with me in it.
I take the exact same party line. Like, I'm very open. Like, if someone wants to come to me and apologize or initiate a dialogue, like, I love that. And I think, especially if someone can like get over their own pride and just be like, listen, you know, let's talk, you know, let's kind of work this out, then I like that. Am I gonna sit around pining after you, chasing after you, sending you messages? Absolutely not.
I'm exactly the same, because I just think I'd rather just direct that energy at myself, even if I felt completely alone and it was like my last friend on earth. It's like, I'm not gonna bother you into being my friend, because then it's just like, it feels like a forced fake friendship anyway, which is just twice as bad. I'd rather just be completely alone, focus on myself, and just find a better way to use that energy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what's the value in something that you're kind of making 100% of the effort to keep alive?
Exactly. It's like when you get a job that you only got because, you know, you're the dad's best friend or whatever, and you kind of never really feel like you've earned it on merit. You're just there out of a favor or because somebody felt bad and you needed a job.
Sorry, can you start that sentence again? Because my thingy just cut out there for a sec.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's kind of like when you need a job, so your dad's best friend gives you a job, and it's like, yeah, the job's really well paid and it's this, that and the other, but you never got that job on merit. You had to get it through favors or because somebody felt sorry for you, and it's like, I don't ever want anything because people feel sorry for me.
That is such a good attitude to have. It's like tainted, it's like dirty money, right? It's,
yeah,
like, I don't want that near me. I don't want the energy of that.
Yeah, like, I can never really appreciate it or feel like I'm like enjoying it because I don't feel like I've earned it.
God, I think we need to write a self-help book, you know?
I think we'd make an exceptional self-help book, quite frankly.
Okay, I'm going to pitch a concept at you in WhatsApp after this.
So excited. I've been thinking about doing one for a while, so this could be phenomenal.
Oh, God, okay. So Ariana and Stassi are at the bar, and I think we've discussed this before, but like, I really like them as a pairing. And if Stassi didn't lean so much into her mean girl persona, I think they would get on a lot better because they actually have more in common than Stassi and even Katie do, I think.
I think they've got the most in common out of possibly all of the castmates. And I really do love them together as well. And I think like those moments where it's just the two of them are so, so like, I don't want to say pure, but like, they're just so real, like, and nice. And I just feel like they get on so well. So it's kind of a shame whenever they do kind of bicker and fall out.
I think as a pairing, they're supremely watchable.
Yes, I agree. I'd watch a spin-off with them, to be fair.
I'd watch naughty videos with them. But I digress. Sheena gets called out for stirring the pot with Stassi, and she completely like backtracks on it. And then at this point, Kara decides to fully like get in on the limelight.
Oh God, Kara is that sloppy drunk girl that we've all met before and we all love. Like, there is nothing worse than this girl on a night out who just comes and, like, inserts herself into conversations. And they're usually quite, like, serious conversations that you're trying to have, or you're just having a good time, and she kind of comes over and she like falls on you and like pushes you out the way, and you just itching to backhand her.
Yeah, Danica is really not into Kara breathing over Stassi's shoulder, but something that I do have to say to Kara, and like take my hat off to you, girl, she saw her opportunity to get some camera time. She fucking took it.
She so fucking took it. I found it quite a weird thing that Danica got like stuck into that situation. Like, I didn't really think there'd ever been a situation where her and Stassi had really interacted, or that her and Ariana were that close. So it was weird that she took it upon herself to be so offended by that. But I was kind of glad that she did, because it was great TV.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that she interjected. And then I love this line from Kara where she goes, "I'm happy you're watching me, because that's what you should be doing."
I'd love to live with that much confidence, just blind fucking confidence in myself.
And then Kara does then actively like go over to Danica and tries to incite something with her.
Also, yeah, sorry, go on.
No, I was just gonna say something that really like was off-putting about Kara. She's got like a very strange lipstick shade going on. It almost looked like greyish. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yes, I thought this too. There's a lipstick that I'd got from is it NYX or NYX? No, I know how you pronounce it. But I've got one like that, and it's kind of, it looks like a nice sort of like dusty purple color on the bottle, but it is just like full gray when you put it on.
Yeah, it was just weird, because even though she's like very tanned and radiant, I felt like it kind of washed her out. It was a strange choice.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling that for her. But yeah, I feel like she was definitely trying to push Danica to do something. Like, and I don't really know why everybody kind of got at Danica about it.
Yeah, I felt like this was, I mean, I don't know why Danica got moved to tears, but I guess it's just like drink getting involved, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's probably like a frustration thing where everybody's suddenly like on this girl's side, but it was this girl that sort of incite like started everything.
We also see a bit of the old Lala getting triggered, like as soon as she senses an escalation in tension.
Yeah.
You know, like the finger pointing's out, she's kind of like puffing up her chest.
Wider as well, and she does that thing where she tries to like draw herself up so she can like stand over people to shout at them.
Yeah. So Danica gets asked to leave.
I felt kind of bad for her, and then Max was fucking barely containing his glee that she got kicked out.
Danica actually gave us some kind of drama in this, so for that I'm forever grateful.
Me too.
Sheena is fully on her festival vibe. She's like bopping on a man's shoulders.
To Lala and James's song.
And then James apologizes to Randall.
I actually really, really like this. And you know what it is? I am such a big fucking Randall fan club member.
Yeah, I really like him now. I mean, to be fair, I think many of us assumed certain things when we first learned that she was dating like a married man.
100%.
As we've kind of seen that relationship play out, like we've really warmed to him. And then also I have to remember that like I was also seeing a married man last year. He was separated, but technically still married. So I can't really be on my janky high horse about this either.
Excellent reference.
I need to check myself.
But no, I just love him so much. And like, I can so see why, like, because I mean, it is that thing at first, like he's not like, you know, like a Brad Pitt looking kind of a guy, and he's got all this money.
I honestly think he's attractive.
I do as well, but I think
love like a dad bod. I love like a little bit of chub.
I do as well. I'm not mad about it at all.
And he's also just like so forgiving and so adult and measured, and this whole scene just made me warm inside.
Same. It gave me like little fuzzy butterflies where I was like, you're such a grown up and you're just so kind and so generous and like such like a real man. It was so nice to see.
Also though, what the hell was Lala wearing? It was like a black t-shirt bra with like a nude colored mesh muumuu over the top.
I have literally written down, what the fuck is Lala wearing? It was atrocious. It was trying to be avant-garde and quirky, and it was just a massive, massive fail.
Oh, and then did you see Brett's hat?
Oh no, I missed the hat.
Oh my god, it was like a leathery Stetson. He literally looks like a cowboy from a 70s porno. It was mad.
That is the worst thing I've ever heard.
The Toms recreate the kiss picture.
Which I did like. It was a good kind of sort of satirical nod, I think. It was a bit meta and I enjoyed it.
I tried to just capture this moment for like my...
Your own personal files.
Yeah, for my own filing cabinet of images that really do it for me.
I'm pretty sure it's on one of their Instagrams. I'm sure you could just...
I might have to revisit. Like, I love that Sandoval, I feel, could possibly swing both ways, although maybe he's one of those people that is so obviously someone that looks like he swings both ways that he actually doesn't.
Yeah, I feel like he's almost like, he's so comfortable with the idea of like being so flamboyant and feminine and like being this kind of ambiguous thing that like he's just super straight.
It's so upsetting to me, but also I guess it means that I have a chance, but like it I would does. Never to Ariana, you know. Sheena in the background of every single like captured scene is just bopping, winding up.
She's truly living her best life. This is what Sheena got on TV to do, was just to be a sort of C-list backgrounder dancing.
And so Dana confronts Max outside about him sleeping around, and he's like, well, it's not like I did it out of spite. And then he at one point goes, I'm turned off by you.
I know. And it's like, okay. So rude. But yeah, this is another bit where I just thought he just talks in such fucking riddles where he's just like, I'm good on you. And it's like, you making me feel some type of way. And it's like, what do these things mean? Like,
it's literally like, do you remember in English when you'd be doing like a 16th century ballad poem and you'd like read the entire thing and be like, I've just said all of these words, but like, do I know what's happening?
Yeah. And you like read something through and it's all just gibberish. And you're like, well, those are definitely words and they're in a sentence, but it means nothing.
Like you can't actually objectify or quantify.
Yeah. And you can't like agree or disagree because it's just meaningless gibberish.
So Lisa gives a toast to the room, some kind of vaguely inspirational kind of stuff.
I truly just aspire to be in a place in my life where I can share a room with Lisa Vanderpump.
We'll make it happen. Out. And then Brittany is absolutely hammered. We cut to a scene with her and Jax at the bar and she can barely keep her eyes open.
She has like full on tequila eyes, doesn't she? And it's that kind of slightly swaying, you definitely think your eyes are open, but you suddenly realise that all you can see is eyelid kind of drunk.
And then Sandoval comes up to her to kind of talk to her about everything, and he's just so respectful in the way that he responds to her. He's like, listen, you're entitled to feel how you feel. He like validates her feelings and then he allows her to speak and say her piece. And I'm just like, this man is just so well-rounded and he's such a good communicator. And like, I don't have a single bad thing to say.
I know. And it's all just so fucking wasted on Jax and Brittany.
Oh, it's just polar opposites, isn't it?
And like they're not even mature enough to appreciate that what he's saying and doing is respectful and mature, and it's like they can't even get past their own thoughts and feelings to think that, hey, maybe it's all right that somebody feels differently.
Yeah, and this is kind of then the climax of the episode. So Jax and Tom, well, they don't really break up, they agree to go on a break.
This was such a fucking girls' breakup. This is probably the most fucking mature breakup that Jax has ever had with another human being in his entire life.
Oh yeah, that's true, because he's actually had to confront it head on rather than like cheating and getting something thrown at him. And then Stassi and Katie are kind of breaking up with Kristen, and we sort of see these scenes playing out in conjunction with one another.
I know, it was nice the way that they did it, but it was kind of so sad at the same time because it was just like watching the old group just like splinter off.
And we all knew it was coming, but that's never going to prepare you for the reality of it.
I know, and I kind of did feel really really sad about it. And it's like, it's hard to feel any sort of emotion when Jax Taylor is speaking. But,
but here we are.
But here we are.
And the music slows and we get this kind of voiceover of Lisa talking. And the most kind of poignant thing, I guess, that I wrote down from this is, I don't know where we go from here. Which is true, not just for the cast members, but like for the show.
I know. I must say, by the way, just as an aside, your Lisa impression is exceptional.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome.
It's because I'm already a stuck-up Englishwoman.
Quite possibly. Just typecasting.
I would so easily settle into a £30 million mansion. I'm not going to lie.
Not so much as a blink or a spill of your drink.
No, I don't think I can ever get into rosé, so that might be dry whites forever for me.
You have like a Villa Pinot or something.
Oh yeah, I like that. Villa Puy Fumé. Slightly less catchy.
Yeah. But more exotic, so who's the real winner?
Exactly. So yeah, and then it just kind of wraps up with everyone, you know, walking off their respective couples, and then you have, you know, sort of James and Raquel getting wrapped up. You've got Stacey and Beau, Jax and Brittany, Katie and Tom, and then you kind of have the those who are left out. You have Kristen sort of by herself, Dana. And it was just...
It was like the sad, melancholy music of the theme tune just playing over the top as well. It was so sad and so eerie. But we did get to finish with the spectacular scene. That was Jax and Lisa's last sort of tit for tat.
Oh my God, yeah. I can't believe that I for some, my notes have just run out at this point. I was quite tired yesterday. Oh my God, yeah, so, he calls it his show.
Yeah, so all the couples had left. And I think there was just Jax and Brittany left at the bar kind of gathering their things. And Lisa has one last attempt at making Jax see, like, try and behave like a normal human. And then Jax calls Vanderpump Rules his show to Lisa Vanderpump.
And that... I think it was really interesting that they chose to include this, because this, again, was breaking the fourth wall. And it's giving us a really kind of real depiction of this Jax persona. Like, it's not just a character that he puts on for TV. Like, he genuinely sees himself as the crux of the show. And I'm not going to lie, Jax is a compelling character. He's not like Max. He is interesting. He is watchable. And he is a great bad guy. And he's a great kind of object to channel all that kind of aggression and that bitterness into. But I think he needs to tread really fucking carefully.
I so wholeheartedly agree. Like, he's the perfect, like, love to hate character. Like, he kind of has enough funny bits in where you kind of don't just out and out loathe him. There's enough where you can kind of be like, oh, classic Jax, you know, oh. And then there's enough stuff where he does that's really serious and really grim. And you're just like, you're just such an asshole, like a human being. And he is the perfect, like, TV villain.
Yeah, but I think it's nice to watch, like, someone who is completely just a moral vacuum.
Yes, and I think that's so important to have in, like, a reality show as well. You need somebody who has zero moral compass at all.
Yeah, and then it makes you feel better about your own life, your own decisions.
Yeah. But it
also does keep things interesting. Like, I don't want them to get rid of Jax.
No, I don't either. I keep seeing loads of stuff of people, like, calling for him to be, like, removed from the show, and you just think, without this bit of, like, Jax-based drama at the end, this season would have had really very little.
Exactly. Like, I think sometimes if you're talking about, like, the standard fan, they don't, like, they take it so seriously that, like, they don't necessarily see what people bring to the show. Like, they're like, oh, I don't like you as a person, so I don't want to watch you, without thinking about the fact that if you don't have anyone, like, acting out, creating tension, like, there is no show to watch, you know? There's no reason to tune in.
Yeah, otherwise you're literally just watching a bunch of people just sat around a pool just like, so, how's work? Yeah, it's good. How's yours? Yeah, it's good. Nobody's fucking watching that, let's be real.
No, I need to have someone who is sleeping with a woman, you know, while she's looking after a 90-year-old who has passed out in the same room. Like, that is what I want to see.
I need a good level of trash to be able to enjoy this.
Well, that's that. It feels... It's strange.
It does. It feels...
Where do we go from here? Where do we go from here, you know?
I don't know. I just don't know. Like, what do we think is going to happen? I feel like they've kind of left it on an ambiguous note where if the season got cancelled or if it kind of got taken out of their hands, they could be like, oh, you know, that's the end. It was just done. That was our way out. Because a lot of the cast members I've noticed have been like sharing photos of it and stuff. And they've all been doing it with this slightly sort of sad, nostalgic, melancholy kind of way, which makes me suspicious.
That's interesting because I don't really follow any of them on social, so I never see this, but I'm interested that they're kind of writing about it in that way.
Yeah, like if you go on, it's like Lala, Schwartz, and I think Stassi and Katie, and like they've all written about in this kind of like, wow, you know, can't believe it's been 8 seasons and, you know, this show has been really good for me. And it all sounds like they're kind of in that weird, potentially leaving sort of tone of voice.
I think COVID's going to put a break on a lot of stuff. So I think it might be a case of like writing off the rest of the year in terms of filming and then kind of coming back to seeing where they could take it next year in terms of spin-off or kind of splitting the franchises in some way. I think they can't deny that there's an appetite for this kind of content, but I think they realize, and I think they've edited into this finale the understanding that like something needs to change. And this felt like a phasing out of this particular form of Vanderpump.
Yeah, I think that as well.
It was laying the groundwork, I think, for like what's going to come next.
And to be fair, if they did it with a full set of spin-offs where it was like maybe the OG cast and then we had like the Tom Tom lot and the Sir lot and the like Vegas ones, I'd probably watch all of them.
Especially if we're still just held in our, in our houses like animals.
Held against our will indefinitely.
I would give anything the benefit of the doubt.
I would as well, and especially when it comes from something that like we know has already been good.
The origin story of Vanderpump, like you'll never get a better sort of initial few seasons of a reality show.
No, never, because that was so pure and there was like no expectation, no kind of knowledge of what it would be or how they should act or any of that. It was just a bunch of like fucked up late 20-year-olds.
Yeah, and it was basically pre kind of social media being as massive as it is, and they had so little self-awareness and so little kind of understanding of personal branding, and I think that's what made it so special.
I agree, and we'll just never have that again.
We never will. Anyway, if you want to follow Faith, keep up to date with not only her fabulous outfits, but also her writing, you can follow her on Instagram at Faith_Elizabeth, Faith with 2 H's. And you can read up on her website as well, which is faithrichardson.co.uk. If you want to follow me, I'm on Twitter at Louisa G. Rogers, and you can kind of read more about what I'm up to on my website, which is louisarogers.net. It was .eu and then I changed to .net because I didn't know if with Brexit it would confuse people, but it makes me sad. I would love to stay .eu.
Oh, you should have flown the flag for the EU.
I know, I'll have to stick to flying my physical flag, which is hanging up in my living room.
Fantastic.
Speak to you on Sunday.
Bye.